You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
Thank you. So, I'm going to ask you all questions, so I'm going to make sure everybody's awake and listening. Is that good? So, how many of you are business majors? A lot of you. That's good. So, in business, you're separated into finance, accounting, management, or just overall business major? What is it, generally? Specialization? It's all good. Well, great. Well, I'm really pleased to be here. And what I want to do is I'm going to, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, where I came from, talk a little bit about, you know, what happened in my life educationally, because I think might be a little bit relevant. Then talk about the early years, you know, whenever I got started out in business and, you know, started with Advance and, you know, some of my career opportunities. And then, you know, lead that into, you know, some leadership lessons that I have learned over a period of time. So by way of background, I grew up in a little small town in southwestern Pennsylvania, 2,000 people. It was known as kind of an Appalachia world. In fact, when I was in middle school, we still had outhouses and coal stoves in schools. So it seems to me like to be, you know, light years away from that, but that was a reality. And I think, I don't know if that still exists a little bit, but I think it does in some of the small rural communities. So I had a wonderful opportunity of being able to go to Penn State. And Penn State was a great institution. It was a place where, you know, I got to expand my horizons because growing up in a small environment and then the opportunity of being up in a place where, you know, there's 50,000 students. And I remember when I first went there, and, you know, you walk into a classroom, you know, with 500 kids, and it's like, oh, my God. And you realize, if this is going to happen, it's going to happen because of me. I need to work hard here because you're just a number. And I think that was a good experience. You know, afterwards, upon graduation, I majored in finance. And then I came here to New Jersey, New York area. So what I really wanted to do is I wanted to be in finance. I went to work on Wall Street. And, you know, during that period of Wall Street, it was one of those big debacles. And, in fact, I have a slide here I want to show you that in that big debacle that, you know, background educationally. But in that big debacle in 1973, when I graduated, the stock market was 1,000. Today it's what? Somebody help me. 16,000. So if you had a dollar then, you'd have $16 if you put in a market index, right? But what happened is right after I graduated, if you can believe this, the stock market went down to 400. So it was really a period of time. There were no jobs on Wall Street. So I made a decision that what I was going to do is I was going to go to work in a bank. Because I thought if I worked in a bank, I would get a lot of overview of education. I would get to understand, you know, transactions. And it actually proved to be really wonderful for me. And so, you know, from that standpoint, you know, I got to be an analyst. And along the way as being an analyst, I got put in this group which was, we were looking at financial credits. It was like, at that time, beneficial finance, household finance. And along with it came real estate investment trusts because we looked at them as credit vehicles and not lending as to a real estate company. Well, Lord and behold, in the mid-70s, we were then doing what we call backup lines of credit against commercial paper. So the commercial paper market, you know, dried up, and immediately all these lines that we had were taken down. And I must tell you that it was one big debacle, and the bank was in financial trouble over this, and there were a lot of issues. So an advisory company came along and said to me, you know, asked me to come to work with them. So I had the opportunity of going to work for a company as an advisor to banks. So I told you a little bit about my role growing up. So my first day on the job, I got to fly to San Francisco. So that was like, you know, big to do then, you know, being, my mid-20s or so. So from that standpoint, you know, I spent the next 4 years getting a tremendous experience. And that tremendous experience had me traveling 400,000 miles a year. So my job was, you know, working with banks and calling on them, selling the service. The other half of my time was working out in the field trying to create these crazy structured transactions so that we could, you know, try to recover dollars from the bank. So I did that for about 4 years, and, you know, it was a path for me that was very difficult. And I realized that, you know, this could get me in trouble, because there was a lot of, I wasn't married, but so he had this life that was just running all over the place. You were on an unlimited expense account, so that was unbelievable. So I had a lot of good fun with that. But at the end of the day, I realized that that was not where my values were, and it was not a place that I could sustain in life. So with that, I ended up leaving and went and started my own business. And in 1979, so that means Advance is now going to be 35 years old in January, I took $5,000, made a deposit on a piece of land in West Orange, and went and got site plan approval to build a 14,000 square foot building. Had no money to close on the property, but I had a fellow who was became a friend, and he owned Midas Muffler Shops. And he said, "Look, you know, I need office space. You know, I'll put up the money. I'll be your partner." So in turn, he became my partner, and then we went ahead and commenced construction on this building. So that's how I got started, you know, in this business. So at the end of the day, a lot of struggle, a lot of headaches. But what happened here is that I had $9,000 of passive income and a $5,000 management fee. That was $14,000. Keep in mind, this is 1979. And I said to myself, I don't give a damn how hard this is. If I can do this 10 times, I can make $150,000 a year. And that's a very good lifestyle. So that was the start of, you know, what happened with Advance. So then along the way, he said to me, look, I want to expand my business. So I ended up creating a deal with him where I would build these Midas Muffler stores. And in fact, I built probably about 18 of these, you know, around the countryside. And he'd pay me a fee. So where I'm leading the story a little bit is that in the early years, we would do almost anything to survive. So I was building Midas Muffler stores. This was our first, or one of our first offices, which is located here in Gladstone. So I'm very concentric to Somerset County. I've been here, you know, probably most of my business career. So that was in Gladstone. But what's interesting here is that, and what I want to show you is, and we'll talk a little bit further, is about how you need to think about you reinvent yourself. Because what happens here along the way, who has ever seen that book, Who Moved My Cheese? Read that book? You know, one day the guy and the mouse is there and he's got all the cheese he wants, and you know, it's pretty easy, and the other mouse has to go really look for it. Well, who survives? The mouse that has to look for it. So in real estate and life, it's about someday your cheese is going to get moved. And for me, you know, we were building a lot of these office buildings, and I say today that, you know, I have this skill that is really a lost art, because nobody wants any office buildings. But what we're doing now is we're taking these complexes, and one of them that we just purchased was the Santa Fe complex right in Bridgewater. And this is a pretty large piece of land. This is 110 acres. And what we're doing is we're going to tear down these front buildings. And then here on the side, we have proposed to build 450 housing units, which are going to be apartments. This turns into a town center with about 200,000 square feet of retail. There'll be a hotel here in the back, and there'll be a Whole Foods or a store like that here. This additional office site, but more importantly, is this really becomes a research center. And if you go in there, it looks like, you know, a big college campus. In fact, Ashland, who is a major farm, specialty chemicals firm, Ashland Oil, they've come there. So it's all about taking a site which is, you know, office space and turning it into more of a site that will be multi-use research. And when you look at it, you know, and people know Somerset County, you know, it has a wealth of intelligence and people. But more importantly, you need places for them to live, work, and play. So that's the model that we're working on. Oops. Reinvention of time. This is a building we're doing in Hoboken. It's under construction right now. So this building is 7 stories, 140 apartments, 22,000 square feet of retail on the first floor. We are the developer in Harrison, New Jersey. This is where Panasonic went. This is a brand-new train station under construction to $250 million investment by the Port Authority, and we're in the process of building out this block. So this is one of the buildings that's going up on one of the blocks, 292 apartments. This is another building that's going to go up that's about 150 apartments. So what I want to talk to you about is that was an overview of more of advance and what we're doing. But at the end of the day, you can look at all this and you can say, well, you know, he knows how to build. You know, we have built, you know, probably 10, 15 million square feet of space. But the question is, can you lead? What is the foundation that creates the mental thinking to lead people so that they pursue an objective? So one of the things that I always, you know, like talking about, especially with students, is to take a look at, you know, your own personal side. How many of you here have a mission statement? You do. That's really great. All right? Because when you have a mission statement, you start to think about things a little bit different. So if you're in business, if you want to lead people, you really need to be in a position that you have a mission, and along with it, you have guiding principles. So I'll share like a personal story, even in my own family, with my sons. We're working on, in their 20s, a family constitution. It talks about the mission of our family, what we want to achieve, how we're going to go about it, what's the direction, what are the timelines, what are you doing to contribute to make things better. So if you look at this, this is what we work on. And what's very interesting about this is really from the 80s. And periodically, when I've gotten in serious trouble, financial markets, you know, my cheese got moved again, I ended up thinking about this. So let's just take a minute and look at it. So from our perspective, we want to be the premier provider of creative real estate solutions. So when you look at it, we want the marketplace as a driving force behind everything we do. You know, without the market, you don't listen to the market, you're going to get killed. At core, we're a real estate company, overriding commitment to quality, and we always emphasize this every time, through today's designs, you can't control tomorrow's costs. Our primary measures of success are customer satisfaction, stakeholder value. We operate as an entrepreneurial organization. You don't want a lot of bureaucracy. You can't have, you know, layers and layers of people, you know, never making a decision. We never lose sight of our strategic mission. We think with a sense of urgency. And outstanding, dedicated people make all of it happen. And I like using this word team. You know, together, everyone accomplishes more. And when you work together, you can accomplish more than you can as an individual. And we have respect for and are sensitive to the needs of our associates and communities in which we operate. And if you work through this mentally, work through it personally or however you think about things, you'll find that it gives you a strategic sense of purpose. It allows you to walk into a meeting and be able to think through a set of standards or behaviors that really are in your heart. And it makes a difference. So with that, you know, what I'm saying here is that, you know, and you read this carefully, you know, education is a seed one may hold both in competence and in conscience. To create the power of competence without a corresponding direction is bad education. Competence will disintegrate without conscious direction. I'll share with you, I've met a lot of bright people in my life. And it's really interesting. You can sit down and talk with them. They got the answer for everything. They can tell you any kind of knowledge. They can tell you direction. But you know something? If you came to them, they can't get a damn thing done. Because they don't understand the process. They don't understand the process of passage whenever they're thinking from one step to another. They've never created a plan for themselves. They're just floating in space. But they think they're accomplishing a lot. You see people, they're always busy. But they don't get anything done. So you don't want to be that kind of person. You want to be a person that understands what it is you're going to do, when you're going to do it, how you're going to do it, and why. So, and that's the key to this, because if you have all this education, you can't, you know, get it to fly in some type of formation, you're somewhat lost. So when I think about this, I think about, you know, the guiding principles. You know, and I use this, you know, with students. So, you know, when you walk in your first job, if you have presence and you have a direction, you're going to be much more convincing to that employer. Because how many times you walk in and you know, the world is like, you know, hey, I'm just graduated, and I'm going to tell you what you should do about the business, and, you know, what are you going to do for me? It really doesn't work that way. You should be thinking about how, the kind of direction and what you can do for your own career and how you're going to contribute. And then one thing that's always really important is whenever you create this mission and statement of values, you know, looking at yourself, your principles, integrity. And I always like this line because it's absolutely true. When your actions are in line with your values, you will create the most happiness. If you think about personally the times that you might have been upset with yourself or regretted something you did, regretting something you did, maybe you did something where your actions weren't in line with your values. But it's good to settle in and think about these guiding principles and think about, you know, how you want to act, behave, so that you can create the most happiness in your life. Is there anybody here that doesn't want to be happy? All right. So, you know, just some little things to think about, you know, from a principle side that are, you know, have substance and know yourself. One of the things that is really compelling is that this whole thing about having an international mind, because it's really important to understand what other people are doing in different places of the world. Because, like it or not, that in a globalized economy, that's having a big effect on how things are done. How many of you heard, like, you know, jobs being outsourced, they're going to India, or their, you know, jobs are going here, wherever the case might be, or they're manufacturing in Bangladesh or manufacturing in China. All these things have effects on the way you should be perceiving and thinking about your own actions. So, with that, continuous education will be your friend. Because having more knowledge is going to help you. New world opportunities will always be present. This knowledge is not always being taught, and you will need to be a self-learner. One of the things that, you know, Terry from Advances here, that I always tell them in the company, I say to them, you know, how many pages can you read in a half hour? And usually, you know, if your consensus is I can read 20 pages in a half hour, then I say to them, you know what, you're such a great person, I'm going to give you 2 weeks off for good behavior. So you're going to read 350 days a year at 20 pages, that's 7,000 pages. So if an average book is 250 pages, 300, you're going to read 20, 25 books a year. Then I ask them, when's the last time you read a book? Because if you are not reading at that pace, and you're not thinking at that kind of pace, that you want to learn and you want to see things, because every time you read and you learn something, it just opens up your horizons. It allows you to think differently. And you need to make that contribution to yourself if you want to be successful. And then I think the other key is about this, that, you know, with open borders, you know, and I can tell you that, you know, like some of the things that we're doing with over here at Santa Fe, you know, we're seeing companies come in from other countries. You know, we see an Israeli company coming in with pharma, where an Indian company is coming in, you know, because of the FDA and stuff. So all this stuff is really becoming important. And to recognize that, you know, those forces are always going to be there. So this is something that I personally work with. And I always looked at life myself is that, what do I really want to do? And so my purpose is to live, to learn, to love, and leave a legacy. So to live means that I want to be excited about everything I do. I want to succeed at endeavors. You know, I want to be in physical health. I want to do the right things for my family to live. To learn, I always want to be in a continuous mode of learning. Because every day that goes by, if you're really not learning something, and you're not thinking about something differently, then you're becoming stagnant. You want to be in a position to love because you want to be passionate. You want to be passionate about the way you think. You want to be passionate about your preferences. You want to be passionate about the people. And you want to love the people around you and try to make this a better place. And lastly, you want to really leave a legacy, because you want to make the passage that you came through in this world to be a better place when you leave. So I'll finish up with this, and then we can talk about... This is one of the things that one of my kids, actually, sons who are in their 20s, put together and said, you know, this is something that I think we as a family should always be thinking about for ourselves when you look under guiding principles. Whatever you do, do with integrity. Wherever you go, go as a leader. Have the courage to lead. Whenever you serve, serve with caring. Whenever you dream, dream with it all. Innovate and never give up. Thank you. So you get kind of an overview. You look at what happened in the 80s. For me, interest rates were, believe it or not, interest rates were 22%. The struggles of those times. How you innovate. How you get through the next decade. And that obviously turns into sustainability. So those are some of the thoughts. But some of the last slides are some of the values and thoughts that have always made me feel and give me the strength in some of the darkest moments to, you know, think ahead. So, want to hear some questions? Thank you. We are a vertically integrated company. So we buy land, we build buildings, we tenant them, finance them, as well as we in turn buy properties like that Santa Fe site and then reposition a whole asset by changing things around.
Have you ever built a school?
No. I built a we used to do a lot of, the Chubb learning centers. We probably did 15 of those. They're like schools, but they're not, you know, a real school. Yeah. I, you know that stint I told you about with doing it as an advisor? Mm-hmm. What happened when we were taking all these properties over, we were in turn then building out. You know, these are jobs that were in foreclosure. These are apartments that needed construction finishing. So I was intimately involved in buying those jobs, and I was around the construction business. So I learned that. Yes? Yeah. I skid over that pretty quick. But, you know, when I said in the beginning about when I grew up, I was in a little town of 2,000 people. And we were poor. So, you know, public assistance kind of poor. But I think what shaped me more is I didn't like that. So I was always... delivering papers, cutting grass. I always had jobs. So I think in that point in time, I was just work. And, you know, I had the fortunate ability, and I think, is that the schools were very weak. I'll share with you that my SATs, I only scored 810. That was really bad. But it wasn't that I the place I went to school, I just never saw this stuff before. You know, I had a very high IQ. I found that out later. But, you know, if you grew up in a place where you don't see anything, you know, we never had an English teacher hardly. I mean, how are you going to score well on those SAT tests? The standardized tests are, and that's why you're hearing a lot of controversy with some of that. But I think ultimately what shaped all that and was, you know, the ability that I didn't like that kind of world, and I worked hard, and, you know, some breaks. Some people came along to help me. some guidance. So, yeah.
Yeah, how long did it take you to hit that peak once you first purchased that building, that plot of land?
The first one?
Yeah.
From start to finish, it was probably about a year, 9 months. Yeah.
Can you think of a time, if there is one, or one that something that you're in charge of or leading didn't necessarily go to plan, and what would you change if you had the chance to do it again?
Well, sometimes, things don't always go to plan because others around you start to have a different objective. So when that occurs, if anything, you have a tendency to want to manage through that, and you want to be kind and considerate and what have you. And in hindsight, when I was in that situation a couple times in my life, I should have really been forceful day one, because that got a little bit sideways from my values. And when that occurs, you either have to, somebody working with you has to understand, or you really need to terminate that relationship. Because, the fastest way is a straight line, right? You go to keep going like this, you don't go very far. So I think the lesson learned is that when you're in a situation, when something is not in line with your values and it's going sideways and they're not listening, you got to get rid of it. You got to move on. Faster. Yeah.
You briefly mentioned Bridgewater location, I think 1, 2, and 3, an office set. Is that the one off 27?
Yeah, there's. We did the corporate headquarters for United National Bank, and then United National Bank sold to PNC, and they vacated. Then we built 3 more buildings, and then we sold the complex.
Is that the
long time ago?
Center Point complex?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have an office there.
Yeah. Those buildings are terrific. They're gorgeous inside. I mean, I've had people from all over, and I built probably at least 25 of those buildings, almost identical standards. And I thought that was my future forever. And it really didn't work out that way. But thank you for the compliment. Yeah. I actually went to another school first called California State College in southwestern Pennsylvania. And so my first, semester, I had one of those almost fail. I didn't have English. That was the issue, composition, writing, literature, all that stuff. So eventually I got up to speed. So I had like a 2.0, and then had my next year I had a 3.0. So that gave me like a 2.5, 2.7, 2.5, 2.6 average. Then I got into Penn State on a transfer.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I was going to say in A-10, there's no way you got
right. By the way, I'm active at Penn State. I'm on the business board. And you mentioned, I think, where, about 6 to 8 months ago, I had Distinguished Alumni Award. Yeah. So, yeah. So 800 SAT can get you through that. By the way, I could never go to that school now. Their standards are much higher. Yeah.
So what did you do differently after that first abysmal semester? And what was your change of mind?
I get scared because I thought, oh my God, it's like those thoughts of you're going to flunk out of school. What the hell am I going to do? Da, da, da. All of you have had some of those thoughts, right? So in that process, I just studied as hard as I could and got real serious. And then my big break was up at Penn State. And I remember my first term, first round of exams, I failed them. I said, oh, now I'm really in serious trouble. So then my attitude was, look, I'm not dumb. I'm going to go to the library every day, 8 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. And I don't give a shit. I'll just keep turning these pages. Because, you know, if I keep turning these pages, something's got to stick. I mean, I'm just not that stupid. So I just keep flipping the pages. And, you know, I had books and I'm reading. But make a long story short, I made a dean's list. No. I worked, don't get me wrong, but when you say worked, I didn't work at a full-time job. I did a little part-time, you know, like we all would do. Yeah.
How long did it take you to build the esteem of people you trust?
You're talking about people in my life?
Yeah, like your team. You say that you all know that team work is like the one that's going to help you succeed in life. So how long did it take you to build a team of people who are going to surround you to, you know, to lead you to success?
So it took me a couple years to convince my wife. So, you know, I think... You remember something about, you know, there's two sides to life. One is the personal side, which is a continuous building. Once you make that absolute commitment, I've been married 32 years. Once you make that absolute commitment, we're committed to one another. We're going to work together, and you're always building, expanding on that. But the way that expands is by growing educationally and growing, you know, with experiences. From a business side, you saw the cycles I sort of went through and how I was trying to reinvent myself. And in fact, right now I'm trying to reinvent myself. It's been very difficult because I'm moving into mixed use, multi, I'm urban now, I'm building apartments and that kind of thing. So when you do that, you're always dealing with a different set of people. You know, some people don't, you know, follow what my theory is, that you constantly have to keep educating yourself. Because if you want to stay with me and you're not educating yourself and you're back here and I'm going here, well, that's a separation and our actions aren't in line with our values, right? So I think there's been some changes over time, but, you know, there's a few people in the company that have been there for more than 20 years. So those I trust intimately. The qualities I really look for is, you know, it's capacity. I look for, by capacity, I mean, do you intellectually have the ability to process and to be able to do the task that I'm requesting of you? Because if you can't do that, then I'm going to be at odds with you day one. So what I try to do in interviewing is I'll give them a problem or I'll give them something and I'll walk away and say, look, I'm coming back in 30 minutes, and I want you to tell me about it. So I'm really looking for their expertise. The other side is I look for integrity. I think integrity is absolutely critical. I look for, you know, their past history. What did you do? You know, I don't care if you're a student or, you know, if you are if you came from another job. I'm looking for someone who had some blood, sweat, and tears along the way, who learn from that, and who can contribute and make a difference. But I think integrity and capacity are probably the two biggest things that weigh on my list. Yeah?
You said you'd built the one building with solar panels. Did you do any more green work, or was that just the one project?
Well, what I learned is that back then, I did several of these passive solar homes. You know, with greenhouses and heat sinks and trom walls and all that. And so what I learned from all that was that if you really build a great house and you insulate it properly and you do all 2x6 exterior walls and so forth, that all this other stuff didn't pay. It didn't work financially.
I'm working for an organization that's in fundraising stage. It's going to be an enormous group home.
Right.
They're hoping to make the entire facility kind of pay for itself with wind turbines and whatnot. What would you say would be their biggest hurdle?
But you have to remember something. When I was doing this, it was 1980. So we're talking about 30 years ago. A lot of technology has come. And, you know, I've been involved in solar projects. And and solar only works when you have the SRAC credits. You need some financial incentives. There's got to be government incentives. By the way, on that property in Santa Fe, there's a 4.5 megawatt power plant there. So give you an idea. And there you can produce electricity for between 4 and 5 cents a kilowatt. So think about, you know, that, and think about distributions, whatever. But I think some of the difficulties are, you know, with what you're saying is anytime you're on a cutting edge of technology, it costs more to install it. It costs more to maintain it. And as a result, sometimes you're challenged. But if you can get it to work, I believe in turbines, by the way. I think wind turbines, and, you know, we tried to do something with water turbines. You think about, there's water everywhere. You know, I was thinking about sewer lines. You know, water's flowing through sewer lines. They could turn a turbine and produce electricity. So you got to be innovative, and, you know, something happens. Look at Apple Computer, right? Anyone else? Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll share with you that I'm just not a person that gives up too easy. So I always think that the harder you work at something, the more creative you get at it. And usually there is a solution behind it. But when you're in a position where you need to, you know, move on, like my example might be, you know, office space. Now, I'm not trying to blow my own horn about this. He's in one of our buildings. We were really good at this stuff. We were down to the point where we were branding our buildings. We had those lobbies. You know, the lobbies are all done by Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, because I was enamored by the architecture. So they looked like, you know, prairie kind, you know, granite and gorgeous. Everybody, you know, says, oh, we were in your building. I said, why? Because I recognized the lobby. So when all that went away, I'm now sitting in a position, what do I do? You know, I lost, you know, significant wealth through this last recession. But, you know, it is what it is. It's really the next step of this is that, you know, there's this new world. You got to think now, study, read. So Terry in our company is a sociology major, went to Harvard. He's working there. And his job is to figure out where everybody demographically is migrating to and why. And our job is to figure out how in the hell we're going to build what they need and be in the right spot at the right time. So that's how we're getting more involved in this millennial kind of, you know, millennials, 25 to 35-year-olds. You know, they want to be urbanized. You know, they're thinking about life totally different. What are the demographics? They're multiple jobs. They want to be near transit. They want to be near entertainment. They want to be, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's a matter of just, you know, when you give up. I've given up on office space. I mean, I'm not building any more office buildings, I can assure you, for quite a while. But, you know, the issue now is that it's exciting. We're figuring this out. We're moving. You saw that we have probably, we'll build probably over the next 5 years, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 apartment units that we have teed up. So it becomes exciting. You need to take on and embrace change. Anybody ever said embrace change? Because in every change, there is an opportunity. And if your head is in the sand, it's hard to see that opportunity. So you need to pick yourself up and say, okay, I understand. We got a game changer. You know, we're going to figure this out. We're going to get the right intelligence, do the right research. We're going to make strategic decisions. Perseverance. Never give up. Never give up. Okay. Well, I think our time's up, right? Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.